Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 202, Smorgasbord, January 2022. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun, and I'm glad you're here with me as we kick off another brand new year. Here we are, 2022, easing into it. I know I'm already 11 days into the month as this goes live. Easing into it with a smorgasbord episode. Got some other stuff in the works that will be coming out in the following weeks, but thought we'd kick off the year doing a little bit of housekeeping. And then also I have a cookbook I want to do a mini review and tell you about a giveaway for. And then I want to talk a little bit about citrus since 'tis the season. So first and foremost, the show notes for this episode will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/202. That'll get you to links to any of the stuff I mentioned, recipes, resources, things like that. So kitchencounterpodcast.com/202. Now you can also send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I know several of you have some emails into me and I'm a little bit tardy on responding. Like I said, I've been easing into 2022, took some time off of the show at the end of the year. And so kind of trying to get back into the groove of things, but I'll get back with folks here in the near future. So feedback@kitchencounterpodcast. You can also find me on Twitter at TKC Podcast, over on Instagram at Kitchen Counter Podcast, and of course, Facebook. So, links to all the Facebook stuff will be in the show notes, but most importantly, the Facebook private group, the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break. You head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. It'll take you to that Facebook group where you could be asked, you can ask to join, and we'll let you into our fun little group of home cooks. Also, don't forget that the Kitchen Counter Podcast is a member of Nitty Grits Podcasts out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans. For more information on the museum, the Nitty Grits Podcasts Network, and other great things that are going on down in New Orleans, head over to southernfood.org. All right, let's jump into the smorgasbord for January 2022. All right, so a few new things to talk about here. In no particular order, but I want to mention over the past several years, probably even longer than that, folks on occasion have come to me and said, hey, I know you do the Amazon affiliate thing, you know, and that supports the show a little bit, but if we wanted to support the show in other ways, what can we do if we wanted to kick you a few dollars or something like that? Now, I typically just say, just tell other folks about the show and all that kind of stuff, but I finally, it only took me years of poking and prodding, but I finally set up a resource where if you are so inclined, and of course it's absolutely not expected, certainly not required, but I set up a Buy Me a Coffee page at buymeacoffee.com/TKC podcast. Buy Me a Coffee is kind of like an up and coming alternative to Patreon. But the cool thing about Buy Me a Coffee is it started out literally like, hey, buy this creator, quote unquote, a coffee, or, you know, whatever a coffee's worth, $2, $3, $4, whatever it is. And you can do it without having to set up an account or become a member or, you know, sign up for certain tiers of access, that kind of stuff. All that stuff is available on the platform. I just haven't set any of that stuff up. But if you go to buymeacoffee.com/TKC podcast and you feel like throwing a few bucks to the show, course, I would be ever grateful for it. The show does cost money to keep alive, of course, you know, with equipment and hosting and all that kind of stuff. So if that's of interest, buymeacoffee.com/TKC podcast. Again, I'll put the links to that in the show notes. And yeah, for now, that's all I'm going to say about that. I don't want to go on and on about it, but I want to let you know for the folks who have asked me before and over the years that if you are interested in supporting the show, there's an option there. And of course, the Amazon affiliate thing's pretty easy too. If you shop on Amazon and you use a link from one of the show notes, you can get, and if you buy something from Amazon, then I get a couple of, you know, pennies on the dollar or whatever, as an affiliate. So that also helps if you're so inclined. Bottom line though, is thanks to all the folks who are interested, in supporting and asked about that. So thank you. So that's an option now. Another thing I am working on setting up for the show is some sort of a live event. It probably in the form of like a streaming video of some sort. Maybe more than one. I say a streaming video because I figure I need to do it once at least to jump into the pool, and then I'll see how that goes and do more if it works out. But it's probably going to be on, say, Facebook or Instagram live for starters. I know not all of you are Facebook or Instagrammers, and I understand that, and I understand the reasons behind that. And I will look at ways to try to do this on other platforms. I'm just, you know, again, dipping my toe in the water, so to speak. And I think the Facebook Live will be, it has the infrastructure and it's kind of set up to do that kind of stuff. So at least for starters, that's probably where I will do it. Now, if you're interested and you do use Facebook or Instagram and you haven't followed the page, you should probably do that so you don't miss the event when I do schedule it. Facebook.com/KitchenCounterPodcast for the Facebook page, and then Instagram at Kitchen Counter Podcast. So I haven't decided even what format. I know in the group I asked the question and I got a few ideas about what kind of content people might want in a Facebook Live or a live video event. Some easier to pull off than others. I don't know if I'll have a live in the kitchen component just yet, but I'm just trying to figure out a way to be a little more interactive where, you know, you're all listening to me speak to you right now, but if you want to interact with me, you kind of have to stop listening and go to social media or send me an email. And then I may take a while to respond to you or not see it or whatever. But so something a little more interactive could be kind of fun. So I'm going to give that a try. So stay tuned. I really would like to, by the end of January, have something scheduled and maybe even done. But we're kind of playing that by ear here at Kitchen Counter Podcast headquarters. But if you have an idea of what you might like topic-wise for something like a live chat, let me know. Send me an email, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com, or hop right over to Facebook or Twitter or wherever and let me know. I'd love to get your feedback as I'm trying to figure out what kind of fun things we can do with that. I know I've said it before in the past, but I promise I'm really going to do it this time. Quite frankly, there's just so much out there to do. And, you know, life is full, time is limited. So just trying to pick a few things to make it all a little more interesting. Now, on that front, there is something else I want to try this year, and I'm thinking of doing it weekly. And for those of you who have been in the private Facebook group, this will be somewhat familiar to you probably, although, again, I don't do it that often in there. I think I may have done it on the actual podcast before too, but in the past we've done things like cooking challenges, where, you know, I would come up with a topic and some parameters, and then you would have like a month. We were doing it monthly for a while in the Facebook group, a cooking challenge. So, you know, this month you need to, I don't know, we've done things like chopped challenges where it's like, here's three categories of ingredients, pick one item or one ingredient from each column and then make something, you know, that kind of stuff. What I found is one, they're kind of tricky to come up with. And two, I think they might have been a little too complicated because not all that many people did them. And I understand it's like, oh, you want me to use my precious cooking time to do a challenge when, you know, I could be cooking something I want to cook, or, you know, making food for my family, or whatever the reasons. I think it's just a little complicated, I think, for all parties involved to pull off. So what I think I want to try to do instead, I've given this a lot of thought, is I want to do something along the lines of cooking prompts. I've not really seen this done anywhere, and I haven't exhaustively researched it. But the idea behind a cooking prompt is essentially borrowed straight from the world of writing and, you know, the creative writing and things like that, where you might have writing prompts. And they're typically relatively short, a sentence or two prompts, in the writing world at least, that will get you to do some writing on that particular topic. You know, just really quick, easy things that you can grab a hold of and write about. And, you know, an example might be, you know, imagine you look out your window and you see a rainbow. Now write a paragraph about that rainbow describing it, but you can't use any color words. You know, just an interesting way to get you to think differently about the way you're writing and the way you describe something that we all kind of take for granted. So I want to take something like that and do cooking prompts where they're short, hopefully achievable, accessible sentence or two things that you can look at. And even if you don't actually end up cooking from the cooking prompt, in which some of these I'm brainstorming up, might not even involve cooking, might just be more of thinking or coming up with ideas in your mind or whatever, I'm hoping they're going to be relatively achievable things. But things that will get you to think about cooking and your kitchen and ingredients in different ways, or perhaps prod you just a little bit to try things that may sound counterintuitive or odd to you, but will get you to, you know, stretch some cooking muscles that maybe you haven't used, or help you get out of your cooking ruts, things like that. And, you know, some of these cooking prompts will be things you've maybe done before and you're like, that's not that interesting. I do that all the time. And some of them might be completely off the wall. You know, so feel free to pick and choose which ones you do and adapt them to whatever your situation is, whatever works for you. But the idea is, on a weekly basis, I'm not going to share them all on a podcast, but on a weekly basis, putting out a cooking prompt that will hopefully, even if, again, if you don't end up cooking the dish, maybe gives you an idea or makes you think of something interesting that you can, you know, adapt and use your own way. On the weeks that I do have an episode, I can share them on the episode, but I'm also going to probably just post them in Facebook and Instagram again, for starters. And I am actually in those locations on Facebook and Instagram. I'm going to go ahead and use the hashtag cooking prompts with an S, cooking prompts. It doesn't look like it's really been used. So if you want to find the cooking prompts that I upload on a weekly basis, search for that hashtag, or just go to the Kitchen Counter podcast account, of course, but search for that hashtag and you'll be able to find those. Now, I'm going to share a cooking prompt in a little bit, but I want to talk about another topic first because they're kind of related. I hope you have fun with them. I hope they spur some creativity again, or just help you move out of a cooking rut. And for those of you that want to approach them like a challenge, I think that's great too. You know, do with them as you will, but above all else, have some fun with them. Yeah, I think that's it pretty much for this episode for the housekeeping bits anyway. So some new things to look out for: live video event and cooking prompts. And if you have any ideas on either one of those, please definitely reach out. I'd love to hear them. All right, I want to move on to another topic and talk about a cookbook I got for Christmas. And I want to share this with you. And in fact, I even like this book so much, I got an extra copy that I want to give away. And I'll tell you how you can do that if you just listen on a little bit longer. And after I talk about this cookbook, I'll give those details up. But the cookbook is In Bibi's Kitchen by Hawa Hassan and Julia Tershin. And the subtitle here is The Recipes and Stories of Grandmothers from the Eight African Countries That Touch the Indian Ocean. So Bibi being a term for grandmother, the way this book is arranged is around these eight countries, and I'll read those off in a minute so you know where exactly we're talking about. But for each of these countries, they interview 2, 3, 4 of these women, and they talk about things like food and food ways and memory and community and home and customs and things like that. And then they ask those women to share some of their favorite recipes from their home country. And of course, those recipes then make up the recipes in this cookbook. So not only are there great recipes and wonderful images in this book, but some really, really great story and you know, cultural content as well. Now, I'm also excited about this, and I don't talk about this a lot, but I think some of you know, because I've mentioned it on the show before, that my son, Alex, who's just turning 10, is Ethiopian. Now, Ethiopia isn't one of the countries in this book, but Eritrea is, which borders Ethiopia to the north, and I was pleased to see that a lot of the recipes in the section for Eritrea were familiar to me from my experience with Ethiopian food and cooking. And I've already made something out of here that I want to tell you about too in a second. But the other thing I just want to say about this book really quick, which I think is great. And this book, by the way, came out in 2020, I think. So it's not a brand spanking new book, but it was new to me. And but one of the other things I like about this book is its focus on the east side of Africa. You know, I think in the United States, when it comes to recipes and cookbooks, we see quite a bit about North Africa and the Mediterranean cuisine. I think West Africa, though also underrepresented, is becoming more of a known entity in cooking in the United States. But you don't see a lot from the eastern side of Africa. So this is a really great book that sort of fills a void, I think, that we've had looking for really, really good books on this part of the world. So the eight countries that we're talking about in this book are Eritrea, Somalia, Kenya, Tanzania, Mozambique, South Africa, Madagascar, and Comoros. And as I mentioned, each country talks with a handful of women from those, each chapter focuses on a handful of women from those countries, grandmothers, so to speak, and their recipes. And so in the Eritrea section, I was so excited to see a recipe for shiro, or shiro wat, and that's spelled S-H-I-R-O. But it's a very popular dish in Ethiopia, and obviously in Eritrea as well. But it's essentially a vegan chickpea stew, ground chickpea stew, that's flavored with, you know, aromatics like onion and garlic, but also Berberi spice, which is a ubiquitous and very popular spice blend from that part of the world. But I've got this recipe in this book that I made, and it was really, really good. And I'm not sure if it's 100% authentic because it doesn't use shiro powder, which I know in a lot of the other recipes I found for shiro, it requires, or they call for shiro powder. This particular recipe calls for ground chickpea flour, which as far as I can tell is essentially what shiro powder is, except shiro powder already has all the spices and stuff mixed into it. So I think this is a pretty good approximation. It definitely tastes like the shiro I know and love. You know, it's close enough to make me pretty happy. I've already made it a couple of times. It's one of these dishes. It's somewhat of the consistency of like a thin porridge, and it's so flavorful. It's wonderful eaten, of course, in Ethiopia with injera bread, but it's also great with any other bread, flat bread. I was dipping crackers in it and eating it. I spread some on some flat bread and essentially made a shiro pizza with it. I mean, it's just, to me, it's warm, it's homey, it makes the house smell great. So I can't wait to try out the other recipes from Eritrea and then the rest of the countries on the east side of Africa. By the way, I did go online and find a couple of places that have that shiro recipe if you want to give it a try before you get the book. One is the New York Times, and they did adapt it slightly, but it's essentially the same recipe. I looked at it. And then interestingly enough, Vogue UK actually reprinted that recipe and two others, word for word, right from the book. So if you want to check those out, I'll put the links to those recipes in the show notes at kitchencounterpodcast.com/202. There's a topic also for another day I just want to put a pin in, but I want at some point to talk about authenticity in home cooking, because I was reading through some of the comments online for the shiro recipe, and folks were, in some cases, aghast at the way the shiro recipe was written. And I won't get into all the details. And I have thoughts about authenticity in home cooking anyway, but they're not fully formed. And I need to kind of think through that. And maybe I'll talk about that in an upcoming episode, because I do think it's important for home cooks to understand the concept of authenticity and understand whether it's important or not, and what does it mean when people say, you know, a recipe is authentic or not. Sometimes I think to our detriment, we get hung up on words like authenticity, and it can be harmful. But I'm going to save that concept for another episode. Suffice it to say, the one recipe I've made out of this book so far has been fantastic. So how do you win a copy? Well, first of all, maybe you don't even want to win a copy and you just want to buy a copy. Well, I would recommend going to your local bookseller and seeing if they can get you a copy of it. There's a link for it on Amazon in the show notes as well. But if you want a free copy, I am running a giveaway for In BB's Kitchen, and it's super simple to enter. All you need to do is head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/giveaway. You'll see a page for the In BB's Kitchen giveaway, and towards the bottom, there'll be some things you can do to enter yourself into the drawing. Typically what I do is if you just give me your name and email, if you click that button, that's usually the only button I put down there. You give me your name and email, that will enter you into the drawing. Well, that option is there, but I added a few other options this time too, like following me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, I think, are the other three. So you can do all four of those and get four entries for the cookbook giveaway. But this is going to run until February 8th, 2022. At that point, everyone who's entered, I will do a random drawing. I'll pull your name out of a digital hat, so to speak, and I will contact you and we'll figure out how to get this in the mail to you. This is open to folks in the United States and Canada. Well, I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, I was going to talk a little bit about citrus because it is that time of year. We are knee deep in citrus season here in the United States. And I know you can buy lemons and limes and oranges and grapefruit and that kind of stuff pretty much year round wherever you're at in the US. But the middle of winter is when citrus really shines. Not only is it really in season and some of those hard to find varieties are showing up in the stores, but they're so bright and cheerful and delicious. They're really the perfect fruit for the dead of winter. It's this time of year when I'm getting a hold of my favorite Caracara oranges in the grocery store. I can't find them, but in the middle of winter. So this is one of my favorite citrus seasons for sure. So I have a tagine, which is a stovetop oven made out of earthware. And this one happens to be part earthware, part cast iron. It's got sort of a shallow base and then a lid that's shaped like a cone. It's a Moroccan and North African cooking vessel that's really great for stews and braises and things like that because it traps the moisture and the condensation, keeps everything inside the tagine nice and moist. But it's really great for making some quick evening stews and things like that. So I wanted to get that out and use it a little bit here in January. And it got me to thinking about lemons and specifically preserved lemons, which I actually mentioned North African cuisine when I was talking about In BB's Kitchen. I just alluded to it, but preserved lemons are a staple of North African tagines, Moroccan tagines in particular. And I thought it would be fun to talk about preserving lemons just for a little bit here because it not only puts to good use some really delicious citrus that you've probably got, you know, readily available all around you, but it's also a fun activity if you're trying to get into fermenting food at home a little bit more because preserved lemons are fermented lemons, essentially. And they're really easy to make. Centuries ago, maybe not even that long ago, maybe even today, one of the ways you could preserve lemons and other citrus for that matter into out of season so you could use the flavor all year round was to preserve them by fermenting. Now, the cool thing about fermenting a lemon is not only does it preserve it and it makes it to where you can put up some lemons for all year, really, it changes the structure of the lemon dramatically, and it changes the flavor a little bit too. It really amps up the lemony flavor. But typically when you're using lemons in your everyday cooking, you're probably using the juice and maybe some of the zest. Those are probably 90% of what home cooks would use a lemon for. Well, preserving a lemon transforms it so you can actually use the entire rind. It softens it up. It gives it sort of a silken, gummy might not be the right word, but a sort of a soft, pliable texture that is loaded with flavor. And just a little bit of preserved lemon rind can really transform a dish. And again, like I said, it's really great in Moroccan tagines with chicken. It's wonderful with fish. You could chop up preserved lemon and put it in your salads, your grain dishes, your grain bowls. Add some to your soups. I mean, really the sky is the limit wherever you're looking for a real bright punch of lemon flavor. And as far as preserving and as far as fermenting, it's about one of the easiest things you can do at home, because all you need are some lemons, of course, some sea salt or kosher salt, and a jar. Now, there are all sorts of recipes that include optional spice mixtures. And in fact, one of the recipes or the processes from Paula Wolfert, who is quite an authority on Mediterranean, North African, Moroccan cooking. She has a famous preserved lemon recipe that I'm going to share in the show notes. But there's spice mixtures, other ingredients you can add to your preserved lemons to give them some flavor. But I think they're fine just plain, just the way they are, just lemons, salt, in a jar. Now, the trick is it does take some time. It's not like you can put up some lemons and preserve them, and in a few days you're using them. We're talking more like 30 days. It's going to take you a month to sort of realize your effort. Now, you can buy preserved lemons in the store. So if you need them right away, you can go out and buy some. But really, for just a few bucks, you can make your own. And it's fun. Like I said, it's preserving and fermenting food at home. So here's how you do it. Now, I mentioned I'm going to put a link in the show notes so you can get all the steps and a couple different recipes to do this, but it's essentially this simple. I just used a pint jar for the batch that I just made, and about four or five lemons, depending on their size. I prefer smaller lemons. They're usually thinner skinned. They're usually, you can fit more in a jar, okay? So smaller lemons, some people prefer Meyer lemons, but the smaller lemons you can find, the fresher lemons are better. So the first thing you want to do is sterilize your jar. I do that typically. I use a glass, pint, mason jar, a wide mouth jar. I just boil up a pan of water, and while it's boiling, I'll immerse the jar in there for, you know, a minute or two and sterilize it and let it dry, air dry. Just like on a paper towel on the countertop. I do that with the lids as well. I use the rings and the canning lids. So sterilize those. Then you want to scrub up your lemons. Don't use any soap or anything like that. Just run them under water. Use a scrub brush and get them nice and clean all around the outside of the lemon, and then dry them off. Then you want to take one end of the lemon, and if you're looking down on it, you're sort of standing it up so the tip is pointing up at you. And you're going to take a knife to the top of that lemon and cut straight down almost all the way through, but not quite. You want to leave about a half an inch of lemon connected on the bottom. So now you've halved the lemon with it still connected on the bottom. Turn it, and you want to do that again. So you have four quarters of the lemon cut nearly all the way through. So the lemon is cut. You can open it up kind of like a flower. It's still connected on the bottom. Now for four or five lemons, you're probably going to use about a third a cup of either sea salt or kosher salt, and you're going to sprinkle it inside where you've opened up that lemon, sprinkle it, cover it real good, probably need about a teaspoon of salt, and then you kind of close that lemon back up. It's not going to close up, but, you know, just sort of put it back into its shape, and you're going to repeat that for all your lemons. Again, I think I had four lemons in my jar, which is what fit. And then in the jar, you put some salt on the bottom of the jar to cover the bottom, probably about a tablespoon, and then you start packing your lemons into that jar. Now, if you have a cocktail muddler, like a little wooden cocktail muddler, which is like one of those things you can stamp down with, to muddle mint or whatever in your cocktail, that works good. If you have a sauerkraut pounder, that works good. Some sort of wooden implement is best. So when you put a lemon in the jar, you put another lemon in the jar, you can take in my case, the muddler, and I just start pushing down. I'm not trying to destroy or mash up the lemons, but I need to get them squished in the jar as tightly as possible for two things. It'll maximize how many lemons I can preserve, but it also starts releasing the lemon juice, which is a critical part of this whole process as well. So after you get all your lemons in there, squished in there as tightly as you can, for me, I pretty much had enough lemon juice from those lemons to cover them. If you don't have enough lemon juice, you probably want to add a little extra just to bring the liquid level up above whatever lemon is in your jar. And you want to use fresh lemon juice. Don't use the stuff that you have in the fridge, like the real lemon or whatever that has preservatives in it. That will be a problem when it comes to the fermenting. So you want to use fresh lemon juice. By the way, all the extra salt you had that fell off the lemons or whatever, if you do the lemons in a bowl, I should have mentioned, you'll capture all that salt, and you can add all that salt into the jar as you're packing the lemons as well. So you've got your lemons in there, you've got juice covering the lemons, go ahead and put your lid on nice and tight, and that's it. You're kind of done with the hard part. You're preserving your lemons. Again, it's going to take about a month, about 30 days, for them to be ready, And every day, probably for the first week, you want to kind of turn your jar over, shake it to really distribute the salt and the juices. You can turn it on its head and let it sit, you know, overnight and turn it back the next day and do that like every 12 hours or so for the first week, just to ensure that all of your lemons are coming into contact with the liquid, you know, to prevent any mold or anything like that. That's it. After 30 days, you've got preserved lemons that when you're ready to use, you just take them out of the jar, give them a rinse under cool water to wash off the excess salt, and then use them however you see fit. Slice them up, chop them up, put them in your soup, stews, cook them with your fish, put them on your pasta, whatever. And those will last a long time. You can put those in the fridge and they'll probably last a year. I've had folks say they leave theirs out all year round and they're fine because they're fermented. It's going to inhibit the growth of you know, any nasty little critters in the jar. But if you want to be on the safe side, you could store them in your fridge. And then you can even reuse your brining liquid if you want to make another batch of lemons in the future. That's it. That's preserved lemons. It's really cool. It's easy. It's home fermenting. I think you should give it a try if you've got an extra canning jar around and you can get your hands on a few lemons and, you know, plan ahead. So in 30 days, you've got some uses for these delicious lemons. If you've never cooked with them, they're a really fun way to add a little bit of a different dimension to your cooking. So I'm already planning out my tagine menu for when my lemons are ready. Now, I almost forgot, but I need to give you this week's cooking prompt. And it's kind of related to the topic we just talked about. It is fruit related, not necessarily citrus, but you can certainly use that if you want. Here's your cooking prompt for the week. Make a main course recipe where fruit is one of the stars of the dish. Make a main course recipe where fruit is one of the stars of the dish. This can be a recipe you find online. It can be a recipe you improvise. You don't even have to cook it. You can just brainstorm it and plan a recipe you might cook in the future. But this is your cooking prompt for this week. I hope you have some fun with it. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Don't forget the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/202. In there, you can find links to the preserving lemon recipes, the information on In BB's Kitchen, and the giveaway, the cooking prompt, and other things I mentioned at the top of the show, like heading over to southernfood.org to check out Nitty Grit's podcasts. Or if you'd like to buy me a coffee, you can find the link there too. I'll be back on January 25th with another episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I hope 2022 is starting out wonderfully for you, and I hope you have big plans, and I hope some of those plans involve getting in the kitchen and cooking up some good food. All right, everybody, until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.